Hi guys, just a reminder that this podcast, as well as many of my online resources, is delivered freely. If you would like to help me get this message of healing out to millions of people around the world, please consider clicking on the donate button on my website, thecureforchronicpain.com. Thank you. Hello, everybody. How are you today? I hope today is a good day. It's a pretty good day for me. This is Nicole Sachs, and you have reached my podcast, The Cure for Chronic Pain. Welcome to it. Welcome to this crazy time in my life. I don't know about you guys, but the fall is upon us, and I have my kids just starting school, and we have a lot going on right now. So I am just full of feelings and sometimes full of anxiety and sometimes full of joy and wonder and just riding the wave of being alive. And it's like kind of as good as you can get, you know, because human pain, ups and downs, but I'm doing pretty well. And I am so excited to share this interview that I did today with Jacqueline Nates. Jacqueline is a therapist, and she was a very severe and acute chronic pain sufferer with back pain, sciatica, and coccidia, I believe it's called coccyx pain. And she is now 100% pain-free and has converted her private practice into one that specializes in TMS. So she is just such a great example of someone who was really debilitated with pain, had two surgeries that turned out to be unnecessary surgeries, but they're just part of her journey, and has a really great inspirational story, an awesome message, and I'm really excited to share that with you today. So that's coming up in just a bit. I want to share with you, thank you guys so much for all of your emails and direct messages on Instagram and wanting to reach out and to connect and to tell me your stories and to heal. And so I unfortunately can't write everyone back, but I do want to tell you I have three live virtual retreats coming up. One is Wednesday, September 29th from 12 to 2 Eastern time, journal speak for radical acceptance. These retreats are live and in person with me. I answer questions. I go through the work. It's very intimate. It's very real and important for people to know that they can get connection. They can get these answers to their questions. I just can't always write emails back. So that's one way to get in touch and to really be part of this with me. The following Wednesday, October 6th, I'm doing a mini retreat on perfectionism, resistance, and codependency from 12 to 2. And the following Wednesday on October 13th, I'm doing a retreat on people pleasing, boundary setting, and just in general, having healthy boundaries. And so all of these retreats, although they're 12 to 2 Eastern time, will be recorded. Every single ticket holder will get the recording to keep forever. So if you are not in the right time zone or you can't make it at that time and you want to purchase your ticket, you will get the full recording. And oftentimes everyone's questions can be everyone else's questions. And so, you know, even if you don't ask a question personally, a lot of the Q&A can really, really help. So anyway, I just wanted to make sure people knew about those retreats because I get so many emails and it's just so difficult that I can't get back to everyone. But that is one way to really, really take advantage of being with me. So I wanted to let you know about that. And also just if you are new to my work, if you have any questions, just go on over to thecureforchronicpain.com. Click on the resources tab. There's frequently asked questions. There's a how to journal speak tab. There's resources connecting you to my Instagram at Nicole Sachs LCSW. New content there every day. This podcast, my YouTube channel called The Cure for Chronic Pain, my online community called Journal Speak with Nicole Sachs LCSW, and my book, The Meaning of Truth. And my online courses, Freedom from Chronic Pain and Freedom from an Anxious Life. So much to take advantage of. Please, please give yourself the gift of being curious. There's so much out there for you to know and to learn and to grow. And I'm really, really happy to be helpful to you in that. Okay, so I'm going to share this interview with Jacqueline. I am so thrilled that she was able to come on the podcast today. And like I said, she is a practicing therapist. So toward the end of the podcast, you will also be able to get the information in order to personally connect with her if you are looking for someone to help you one-on-one with this work. All right, guys, I wish you love. I wish you light. I hope today is a good day. And if it's not, I hope that the next hour spent with me and with Jacqueline will help turn it around for you. All right, I send you big love. Enjoy. Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Cure for Chronic Pain. I am here with Jacqueline today. Welcome, Jacqueline.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
So you're very welcome. So today I am very excited. So Jacqueline and I have been in correspondence a bit over the past year. I know that she's been to at least one of my virtual retreats, right?
Correct.
Yes. And she's just been a person who I know is really eager to share her story. And I am so excited to we finally gotten around to do it. So Jacqueline, I am going to do what I always do, is hand it over to you because I'm fascinated by each of our stories and I can't wait to hear yours.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. So my chronic pain journey began at 26 years old. I bent over, I was vacuuming, I was cleaning, I stood up the wrong way, and that was it. I was doubled over, flooded with the most excruciating pain. I was just beside myself. I couldn't move. My husband, who was my boyfriend at the time, you know, was just like, oh my gosh, what's wrong? What do we do? And there was just so much panic and so much fear. I was laid up, I want to say it felt like about 2 weeks. From that point, I went from doctor to doctor to doctor. And after going to one doctor the next, I got MRIs done, and the MRI showed that I had a herniated disc at my L5S1, L4, L5. And I was like, oh my gosh, what does that mean? So I tried all the things. I tried physical therapy. I tried acupuncture. I tried steroid injections, and nothing worked. After about, I want to say, a year and a half of struggling and trying, meanwhile, during this time, I was studying for my licensure to become a licensed therapist.
Right.
And I also was doing my hours at a local training center in Los Angeles. And I would sit in my sessions with ice packs. And I had my little cushion that I would bring to every session. I mean, it was awful. But I was like, there's no way that I'm not going to do, you know, this therapy thing, because I really wanted to be a therapist. So with that being said, I finally, after a year and a half, said, okay, I can't do this anymore. This is not helping. Nothing's working. And I went to a spine surgeon in Los Angeles that was really well known. And he said, okay, you need what's called a microdiscectomy. So we're going to shave off the portion of the disc that's bulging into your nerve, and that will fix things. So I said, okay, this is my doctor. He's going to cure me. He's going to fix me. And let me tell you, at this time, I had so much fear that it was the doctors that were just going to save me.
Right.
I had such little trust in myself. So, and I want to say, before I actually had the surgery, I actually was told to read Dr. Sarno's book, Healing Back Pain. And so I was an intern. I was psychologically minded. I was studying, you know, I was doing all the therapy things, and his book made a lot of sense. I was all the things, as people will say, right? I like saw myself in every page. I was perfectionistic,
right.
A people pleaser, goodest, avoided confrontation to a fault. All the things describe my personality. But I could not digest the material at that time. So I just couldn't digest it. I just think I had so much fear, and I was just convinced that this doctor was just going to fix me and I was going to be perfect and great. So I ended up having the surgery, which was 6 months before I got married. It was March of 2010. So it's March of 2010, and I had my surgery, and I was great. I was great for so many years. I thought, okay, I'm fantastic. I had my son, I was exercising, and I was always, just so you know too, to add, I was always extremely, extremely hard on myself. So after I had my son, I was going to lose that baby weight, and I was going to go to all these exercise classes, and I was going to try these different diets, and which brings up, you know, that I struggled with a history of an eating disorder in college as well. So, you know, I was just doing great for so long. And then 9 years later, this was about 9 months after I had my daughter, I hurt myself again. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's in the same place. I can't believe that this is happening. And I went back to my spine surgeon and I had an MRI done right away because he said, you know what, we can't know anything unless we get imaging done. And my MRI revealed that I had re-herniated my disc that I had surgery on.
Right.
So I said, oh my goodness, what does that mean? Does that mean that I'm going to need another surgery, another microdiscectomy? They said, oh no, no, no. You're going to need an artificial disc replacement. So that right there just sent me in, you know, talk about the anxiety piece, which I definitely struggle with anxiety, you know, my whole life with different experiences that have happened along the way in my life. But I had so much fear that I had ruined, you know, my spine again. I had done this to myself. I was in an exercise class and I had overdone it in a Pilates class, which I thought. And it was interesting because it wasn't the same exact kind of pain as it was, you know, prior. It was this dull, aching pain. And before it was the shooting, stabbing pain. And so from that spine surgeon, I consulted with two other spine surgeons that were well-known in Los Angeles. One of them told me that I needed a double disc replacement. And the other surgeon told me that if I didn't act fast, that I was going to need a fusion and that I had degenerative disc disease.
Right. Yeah. No, I've heard this is the tale as old as time. Yeah.
I know. I know. So with that being said, I understand so much now of symptom imperatives, and I see different symptom imperatives now throughout my life. But from that point, before I had decided to go through the artificial disc replacement surgery, which was about 9 years later after my first surgery, I had this shift in pain from this dull achiness in my back that was spasming all over 24/7, just debilitating pain, to horrific sciatica. So I no longer had the symptoms in my back, but the sciatica was bilateral. It was down both my legs.
Did you say you got the second surgery or no?
I did.
So you had the first surgery, and I want to say something about the first surgery because I just want to definitely frame this for people and also for you, which is that when you said you had absolute faith in the doctors and very little faith in yourself, that makes sense to me why the first surgery allayed your TMS for a bit, because when you have total faith in anything, your nervous system relaxes. And although you never needed that first surgery, and I definitely want to frame the second time when you said, I hurt myself again. Well, you didn't hurt anything and nothing was ever wrong, but this is the way TMS works, is that it will rise and fall in our bodies as a protective mechanism based on our nervous system and whether or not it feels that we're safe, you know, to experience our human life. And so when I think the reason the first surgery was so effective for you is because indeed your belief in the medical community at the time, before it began to let you down, was so incredibly solid. You know what I'm saying?
100%. It makes perfect sense. And, you know, and I went back with that same belief, going back to the same spine surgeon, that he had to do my second surgery and that I definitely need this artificial disc replacement because they were telling me that if I didn't act soon, that I would need a fusion and that an artificial disc would give me so much more mobility through my life. And
so you did have it, but then the sciatica started.
So I ended up having it because the sciatica shifted from horrific burn. So first it started off as horrific spasms. And I had the spasms, I want to say, for about 8 months. And I tried the physical therapy again, and I did the I did physical therapy for so long, which did nothing and created just, I think, just more fear. And then I did injections again, which did absolutely nothing. But then the pain shifted to sciatica. And once it got to sciatica was when I decided to have the surgery, because it went from this horrific burning sensation for several months to then complete numbness, where every time I would sit, I couldn't feel my legs. And the doctors told me that, yeah, I'm just a definite candidate for artificial disc replacement. So I ended up going through the surgery. Not only that, but you're talking about my nervous system. I had this surgery on the calendar booked for 6 months. I just had it booked, which is crazy looking back now. But I thought that I was doing the right thing, because I told myself my son was graduating preschool at the time and he was going to be entering kindergarten after the summer. And my daughter was 15 months at the time. And everyone was telling me this would be the right time to do it, because the doctors were telling me it was just going to keep getting progressively worse and that I was definitely going to need a fusion if I didn't act soon. So I was like, this is the time I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it in the summer. And I remember someone told me, big people, big problems, little people, little problems. This would be the right time for you to do this as a mom.
I mean, I would have, I'm right with you. Like, I would have done the same thing.
I mean, but
if I didn't know better, yeah.
So I ended up going through the surgery. And I also want to say this, that's really important for people that are listening. Before I decided to, you know, go through the surgery, I mean, it was already on the calendar, as you know, but I also joined Facebook groups for people that were going to or had already had an artificial disc replacement. And then in these groups, people were talking about the best kind of artificial disc to get. And the best artificial disc to get were the ones where you would travel to Germany, and people from the States were traveling to Germany because those were apparently like the top-notch ones. And I mean, you can just imagine, you know, you talk about, I've heard in different ways where people will be in different groups and they're commiserating over their symptoms because they feel a sense of understanding.
Of course, yeah.
And it is the absolute worst thing to do. There's a difference in your group and in terms of the, you know, your Facebook group, because it's about healing and unity and helping people along the way in their journeys. But when you're in a group where it's strictly about just how you're, I mean, I think about women that are on different elimination diets, right? For pelvic pain conditions or you name it, right? I just can see now looking back, my nervous system was just haywire going into the surgery.
Right. Makes sense.
So had the surgery, thought that, oh my gosh, I'm cured. I feel, you know, nothing in my legs. It's absolutely incredible. I'm healed. I'm going to be great. And there, about, I want to say a month after I had the surgery, I mean, I was in, it was, the recovery was insane. I thought, it's almost like, you know, when I got out of surgery and my spine surgeon came over, I felt that sense of, oh, he fixed me. He cured me again. Like he's like godlike or something. I mean, I put so much power into my doctors that looking back now, you know, I had to be on pain meds around the clock, and my legs felt like they were being electrocuted for 6 months after the surgery. And I would call my doctor's office and he would say, oh, I think it's just because you're an athlete and athletes tend to be really sensitive. So maybe you're just more sensitive than others in the recovery of the surgery.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean to sound negative about the medical community, because I actually don't think that most of them mean well. Like I just use a double negative. I do think that most of them mean well, but to hear these things, my goodness, I mean, it's so silly.
Yeah, you know. I mean, looking back, I'm just like, wow. I mean, so not only did I go through this surgery where I, at the time, I had so much fear where I'd like put this thing in my spine, right? But he'd also shared with me that he had stretched open my disc space to the time when I was 16 years old. So just then I like kept having the visual of like my disc being stretched open so large so that they could put it in. I mean, I was just in so much fear. So that happened. And from there, I felt like anytime I tried to call my doctor's office, it was almost like I was just being a nuisance, you know, like she's fine. Like she's way too anxious. And I'm sure I was anxious because I was terrified that I had like ruined myself from the surgery because my legs felt like they were being electrocuted unless I was on the clock taking pain meds.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So what happened? Did you ever feel that great pain relief after the second surgery, or was it just downhill from there?
So here's my next symptom imperative. So then that finally dissipated. Then I developed coccidentia.
Oh, yes.
I developed horrible coccyx pain. And my spine surgeon said, you know, why don't you get an x-ray? And the x-ray showed that I had a hairline fracture, my coccyx bone, and that it should heal on its own. And I said, could the surgery have caused this hairline fracture? And he said, no way. It's so far below that area. So it just made no sense to me. And I remember I would lay on my children's playroom floor because it was really sunny in that room. And I felt so depressed. And, you know, I had taken medical leave from my job at UCLA at the time. I was a therapist at UCLA for many years. And so from that medical leave and just, you know, the recovery taking far longer than I thought it would take, I was just in such despair. And I would lay on the playroom floor, and it was hard, but it was the only place that like gave me a sense of peace because there were a lot of big windows and I felt the sunlight coming in. And I was like, could me laying down on my children's playroom floor so much cause this hairline fracture? And he said, I don't know, maybe, I don't know.
Oh boy, of course not.
Right? So then in terms of the normal healing time, you know, we break bones, like our bodies have an incredible way of healing themselves. So the fact that my coccyx bone pain, it took close to 2 years to fully heal. And so that's my surgery story. And from having the surgeries and going through, you know, my horrible back pain condition stuff that happened, I, you know, like I said, I developed the coccidinia, and I just was never a spiritual person. I grew up Jewish. I'm an only child like you.
Same.
Yeah, but I didn't grow up religious or anything, just culturally Jewish.
And
I never had a sense of spirituality. And I felt like, okay, this is my time to really, I don't know, dig deep, because I was just in such despair. During my recovery, I started listening to different podcasts. I was doing like Oprah Super Soul conversations. I was listening to Eckhart Tolle. I was listening to Gabrielle Bernstein, downloading different books. And then I Googled chronic pain podcasts and you came up. And I listened to your story and I said, oh my gosh, she was Jewish. She's an only child. All the things. It just, our stories felt very similar. And I felt like you were me and I was you. And I'm sure you hear this all the time. And like you said, we all suffer the same.
Yeah.
So, you know, so then I started listening to your podcast and I downloaded your course and I got through a few of the courses, but you were leading your virtual retreat while it was September 2020. And I believe it was Rosh Hashanah or something.
It was. I'm a terrible Jew. I didn't even realize it was Rosh Hashanah when I planned it. And then a couple of Jewish people had gotten in touch with me and said, you know, you're really kind of, you're putting it at an inconvenient time for the Jewish community. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. But by that point I couldn't change it. So yeah, it was Rosh Hashanah.
Right. And I just remember, but I'm just like you, you know? And so I was like, you know what, I'm going to do this. So I got your book and I did your virtual retreat, and that changed the course for me, because whether it's me being an auditory learner or just needing to get that reassurance, I think that's something I always struggled with in my life, was just wanting that reassurance. And I just think about the way in which my pain journey went. I always needed to get the reassuring information from the doctors of what was going to be the best course of action that I needed to hear. It's like coccyx pain, like coccydynia. Yeah, it's all part of it. You know, it's just manifesting in different ways in your body. So from there, and I had done the journal speak practice, it wasn't every day, but once I did your course, I started doing the journaling practice and then followed by the meditation every day for a period of time. And what is it? It's crazy. It's really funny actually, because I think about the time and it's a year later basically.
Yeah, it is. And, we just had the high holidays, so it's right. A year later.
Right. And I am 100% chronic pain free. And yeah, I'm 100% chronic pain free. Not only am I chronic pain free, but I have also changed my entire perspective on life and who I always needed to be in order to stay safe and who I've allowed myself to really become. And I remember you saying once that, look, you don't have to change your job or you don't have to do big crazy things to heal from different conditions in the body. But looking back just in my story, I worked at UCLA for 7.5 years and I specialized in trauma work. And the time there was invaluable. It was great. But I also felt that I was staying at that job for far too long because I was just afraid to leave and go out on my own.
Right.
And this work really propelled me to like find my truth and know that this is the work that I want to do. So I mean, you can imagine like everything has become virtual for so long. I was seeing UCLA patients for, you know, gosh, since the pandemic started virtually, and, you know, everything's been virtual since pretty much. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to make this change. And I did. And if I didn't do this work, I don't think I ever would have felt the confidence or the strength or like the wisdom within myself to leave. And it's just incredible because this work, any sort of like going through this mind-body work, it's not just about recovering from stress-induced illness in the body, however it lands in your body, but it's about like finding out who you are, how you've always operated, and that you can have so much more in your life. And it doesn't mean having to change careers or change jobs, but for me, it gave me a sense of like permission that I always needed from others, and that I didn't need that anymore. You know, I could just go out and do this work. And so I did your virtual retreat, like I said, and I left UCLA of January of this year, and I've been in private practice. And I also got certified in neuroplastic pain and pain reprocessing therapy, which is really cool because I find that for some people that can be really resistant to the work, that really explaining and giving the psychoeducation of brain science behind it all is just, it's awesome. So yeah, so that's kind of where my pain journey started. But I have to say, looking back to my childhood and traumas that happened along the way in my life, I see how I was on autopilot for so long. I remember even people would say to me, or remember it was teachers, like, oh, she's such a good little girl. You know, right. I was always the straight A student and I had to be perfect and I had to be thin and I had to be pretty, just like all the things. I was always so, so hard on myself. And I'm still working on that for sure.
Yeah. But it's a lifelong journey.
Yeah, it really is. It really, really is. But looking back, I see that I had symptoms of, well, let's call it just anxiety, right? From a very young age, my mom struggled with alcohol from a very, very young age. I was about five from my first memories. And my dad was killed in a motorcycle accident when I was 20, which was a week before my 21st birthday. And that trauma, and before that, my boyfriend at the time in high school, he'd gotten into a horrible car accident. And it's just, it was just awful. So I've had these like big sudden traumas in my life. And my way of always coping and going through life was, you can't stop. You got to go. Your mom's falling apart. Like, you right. can't fall apart. I was an only child. Like, I had to be good. I had to get my straight A's. I had to be the best friend for everyone. And there was no room to mess up.
Wow, you are super duper TMS personality extraordinaire.
I am.
Yeah. But you know what? Before I want to talk more about your childhood. There's so many things I want to talk about. So I want to just go back and do a couple of things from the beginning. So I want to really frame this well, because your story is fantastic. And it's also fantastic because it's so textbook. And I love textbook stories, because as any scientifically minded psychotherapist, it's great to have sort of a case study, you know, of something that's textbook. And so right. I want to first say that neither of your surgeries were necessary. Do you agree with that?
1,000%.
Okay, because I want to say that for listeners, because sometimes when I interview someone, the story goes, and it could be assumed for someone, especially if they haven't heard a lot about this work, oh, well, you know, she half needed those surgeries, or those surgeries were, of course, necessary to clean up the disc, and then she did the work. No, what I want people to understand, and I say this with absolute certainty, and I just heard Jacqueline say 1,000%, so I know she's agreeing with me. What happened with Jacqueline is that she had a childhood, a personality, and a lot of other factors that led her to repress a lot of emotions. It came to the fore in her back, because we all have normal abnormalities in our back that do not cause pain. Bulging discs do not cause pain. Spondylolisthesis does not cause pain. I've seen this over and over and over again, so I say it with incredible confidence that when a surgeon sees these normal abnormalities, they make adjustments in our back most of the time. I also find that people aren't harmed by the surgery, which is great news. It's just sort of a whole lot of nothing. But when we assign meaning to surgery, then that surgery can indeed lead to the nervous system switching from fight or flight to rest and repair, especially when someone like Jacqueline, who had such confidence in her surgeon and in the medical model. So that's what happened the first time. Now, the second time, so essentially, all three of these incidents, which is the back pain, the sciatica, and all that other stuff that it accompanied, and the coccyx pain, all three of those things were just manifestations of TMS, which means three ways that her body was looking to help her out and to distract her from her repressed emotional world and her stored trauma by giving her something tangible to work on. Jacqueline could have just as easily had irritable bowel, migraines, and fibromyalgia, three things that don't have a structural underlying cause and three things that can't get surgery. And that would have been her story then. So I just kind of want to reiterate that these are just three manifestations that, you know, rose up and gave her an opportunity to be safe in the unsafest way, which is to attend to those things and to not attend to what she really needed to attend to. And when she decided, or not decided, but came into the understanding that there were underlying things to attend to and dealt with that, now she's chronic pain free, which would be the same story, as I said, if she had skin disorders or pelvic pain or, you know, IC or irritable bowel or migraines or fibro. Because when I deal with people all over the world with different conditions, the story is the same. So when someone has had surgery, it's just so important for me to reiterate. You know where I'm going with this, right, Jacqueline? You understand.
Yes, yes, I do. I think for me, the one thing that's I'm still working through is forgiving myself for having the second surgery has still been something that I find myself struggling with at times, and more times I feel at peace with it, but it's been really hard to look. I mean, I would never be doing this work, and my journey is part of my journey, as I understand. but it's hard for me to know that, oh my goodness, like I had this crazy surgery and I had this artificial dish put in my spine. And the best way that I've been able to come to peace with it is I call it my sugar, because it's a part of me now. Mm-hmm. But it still is something that I can have conflict with a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, yes, of course. I mean, your conflict is your conflict. I would just invite you to have a tremendous amount of self-compassion, because when we're scared and when we don't know what to do for ourselves, we put our trust wherever it makes sense to put our trust. Right. You know, I mean, I've heard the same story from people who put their trust in, let's say, religion or clergy and get, you know, disappointed by that, or put their trust in their parents, or put their trust in their coach because, you know, they were an athlete and that was where they got their self-worth. Like, so we put our trust where we need to when we're scared and when we're lost and when we're struggling and when we're going through our journey. But as soon as we wake up, our only job is to have a ridiculous, tremendous amount of self-compassion for that little girl or boy or person who needed to put their trust somewhere. And you did.
Yeah. That's a good way to frame it, because, yeah, that's what it was. And it's just, like you said, forgiving myself, just a lot of self-compassion, which is something that is a work in progress for me.
Totally, totally. And it's a work in progress for me. I mean, it's a work in progress for all of us to have the amount of self-compassion. You know, I do think that to normalize it, human beings aren't really built for self-compassion because we're really built for survival. You know, I mean, if we're really going to go back to the primary purpose of the human race, it's to make more humans and mm-hmm. to stay alive. Well, I guess you have to stay alive first and then you can make more humans. And so, you know, that's our nervous system, our most basic primitive functioning is going to go toward that. It needs to be our intention to pause and to practice self-compassion and to practice connection and all the things that we learn here in this work that I teach and other related work, because that's sort of a higher level of functioning that we have to intentionally choose. So, you know, we're all on a journey.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I know we're all on a journey, and you know, this is just part of my journey, but it's so interesting in doing this work and looking back how just the good little girl I always had to be with everyone. And even through my adult life of wanting to be, you know, just always wanting to be there for everyone to a fault and wanting to make sure no one would be upset with me and working so hard. And like I said, needing to always get straight A's and I grew up in a really loving home. That's the thing. I grew up in a really loving home. It was just a bit chaotic, you know, and I was really, really close to my dad and it was sudden. And there were just lots of things that happened. And I see now so clearly how my nervous system, it got to a point where it just reached critical mass and it landed in my back.
Right. Right. Yeah. And so talk to me more about your journal speak practice and like that kind of thing. Did you find resistance? Did you find some of like the top reasons that people kind of stop and walk away from this work? Tell me more about, because I mean, it seems like your journey was so successful in the fact that you are free of any chronic pain and changing your life and expanding your horizons. What were the bumps along the way?
I was definitely resistant to doing the daily journaling. And until I did your retreat, it really sunk in like, okay, I got to do this already. Like, okay, come on, Jack, you know, like, but let's do this. But it was really hard for me. I felt that one of the pieces was really, really just fully going in that, what do I have to lose, right? That I have gone from doctor to doctor. And like you said too, like there's nothing against the medical model, but it's not the only way. And that's what I really want people to understand too, is there's so much faith. And it's funny because faith is my middle name, but there's so much faith that we put into our doctors to fix us and to cure us. And we're just left powerless. And that was me just feeling just like so powerless over my own just over my own body in a way. So I felt that the doubt of it fully being mind body and that it wasn't something physical for a period of time was really hard for me. And that was a piece of the resistance. And the other resistance was just actually doing the work. And then at one point I was like, okay, like I gotta do this. I've tried all options and I've got nothing to lose here. So all these stories sound just like mine, however it's manifesting in their bodies. It's just all the same. So yeah. And I think it was just listening because people want to feel understood and people right. want to feel connected because we're hardwired for connection. So I think it was just hearing that people, whether it was people going through surgeries that had fully recovered. I think her name on your podcast, was it Kitty?
Kitty Pert? The Kitty who with the pelvic pain?
Oh my gosh, her story just really hit me. And just, I think it also gave me such faith in, wait a second, look how many surgeries she's had. I think she had like, I don't know if it was 15.
Yeah, she really went through it. Yeah.
She went through so much. And so I also had this sort of resistance that I was going to have more issues because I had had surgeries and that you hadn't had surgeries or people that hadn't had surgeries or that they hadn't altered their bodies, that they were going to be far better off in this recovery process of TMS. And that's what I really want people to know too is, you know, it's so important because however your body has been changed or altered or whatever has been done, like you have the power to heal yourself. And that's what I really have learned from this work. And it's just about surrendering to like what is and just developing more trust in the process that however you've come into this, it's okay.
Right.
You know, has been really huge for me. So it was really helpful to hear people's stories that have also had surgeries because I had some conflict too, that I had would have more of a difficult time in terms of the resistance part of this because I had altered my body.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And also, you know, another thing I'm thinking as you're talking in terms of like when you said other people might have it easier than me, just realize I'm saying this to you, Jacqueline, but also to anyone listening, that is so part of the TMS personality. This like very like everyone has it better than me. I'm the one this isn't going to work for. I'm terrified that I'm going to be like, it's almost, I've heard so many people tell me that they don't start this in the first place because they can't bear the concept of maybe they're the one that this doesn't work for.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, I just want to say that like, A, hello, once again, welcome to the club. And B, everyone is like that. And then just pick your poison. You know, you happen to have had surgery, so you can make it about that. But like other people will be like, other people might be jealous of you because you have a structural abnormality. And they're like, but I have fibromyalgia and nobody can even see that. And I'm alone that, you know, for that. Or I have pelvic pain and it's so embarrassing. So I'm alone for that. Like we all just feel alone. We're all just sweet babies walking around desperate for connection, desperate for forgiveness, desperate for self-forgiveness. Like it's so poignant and it's yeah. quite beautiful for me because, you know, easy for me to say I'm not struggling in chronic pain, but I certainly was. And it wasn't yeah. so beautiful and poignant to me then.
No,
back then it was just suck ass sucking, but you know, but wonderful that we can be here to inspire other people to, you know, to step over that resistance and to just say, you know, screw it. I'm just going to do this because they're hearing us talk and they know that we're just like them. And I hope that's what people are hearing because that is certainly my intention. And so Jacqueline, this is a question I ask everyone, which is you're looking out over a sea of potentially thousands and thousands and thousands of people who may be suffering on the day that you would consider your worst day. What do you want to say to people? What would be your best share advice, whatever you think?
On your absolute worst day, I would say just tend inward that you, however horrific you feel right now, know that you are going to be okay and that you can fully heal yourself. And a really important piece here, especially for us TMSers, let go of outcome.
Yes. Because
the outcome will keep you in such a stuck place where you cannot allow yourself and allow your nervous system to calm down, to let you do your thing. And you're in charge now. And no matter how many doctors you've seen or what your path has been or how bad things are for you right now, if you're feeling in such despair, if you're feeling suicidal, if you're feeling however dark your day is, know that you are not alone and that your path is just however it's supposed to go. And when you focus on how long something is going to take or how quick you want to get results, that it will delay your healing process. Just allow.
Yes, I agree with that so much. I recently put a post on Instagram that said we have to move from trying to allowing.
Oh, I love that. Yes, I think I saw that. I mean, I see it. Yes. It's so true though, because fear is, that is what creates and maintains the symptoms. That's another thing I want people to like really hear from me is looking back at my journey. Like, look, I was in fight or flight my whole life. You know, I was just this perfectionistic, good little girl. There was lots of stuff that happened along the way, but if I was good, if I was thin, if I was liked by everyone, then I was safe. And you need to just allow yourself to just go, you know, just turn that trust back in yourself.
Right. Right. Well, because we always trust something, you know, and even if our only trust is that we trust that we're never going to get better, then that's where we put our trust.
Faith is
what it is. You know, unfortunately we all worship something. And if sometimes we worship our own, you know, ego, and sometimes we worship power structures that, that, you know, we think that are stronger than us. And sometimes we worship medical model, like, you know, so to just pause, I love that advice, to just pause and look inward and say, maybe if I could just be and do the next right considered action and do this work and try it out. I mean, that's what I always say. Use your body as your proof. Do a science experiment on yourself. You know, see if you're listening to the podcast and doing the work and practicing self-compassion, if you start to feel the pain ease. And if you do, there's no way it can be a structural abnormality, because a structural abnormality would not wax and wane. The pain would not move around. You know, like I think of like a classic structural problem in the body, which is like a gaping infected wound. Okay. If you have ever had a wound with an infection that's like all red and angry, that thing doesn't hurt sometimes, and other times it just totally turns off. That shit hurts. Yeah. And it hurts until you get the right care, right?
Yeah.
And so these problems where people are like, well, sometimes it hurts in my lower back, sometimes it shoots down my leg, sometimes it's up in my shoulder oddly. It's like, no, this is just TMS. And when people start getting it, that's when they start changing their lives. So I want to tell you, this is like, so as an aside, but it's just such a cool story, because I know he'll be listening. I today had the craziest experience where there's a coffee shop in town that I go to all the time. And over the past, let's say, 3 or 4 years, I've seen this kid. And when I say kid, you know, early 20s,
right.
Walking around with a massive back brace, like those kind, like those things that's almost like a foot wide, like they look like almost like a weight belt around his waist. And of course, I saw him all the time. And I just would think to myself, oh man, I could help that kid. But like, I don't approach people anymore, because it's people need to be, like you said, you saw the book and you couldn't digest the material. Like, true readiness is everything. So you have to be ready. And so I just would see him and think like, sort of, oh, that's, you know, I hope he finds his way. And so yesterday I was in this coffee shop. I'd finished my run and I went to get my chai, my iced chai latte. And I was walking past him and I just looked at him in almost a different way. I'm telling you, this is down the spiritual road, because I don't know why. I just kind of looked at him and I was like, man, That kid. That was it. It was just kind of in my mind. It flowed through me and I left. Last night, I get an Instagram message in my message requests, so not somebody that I follow. And this person wrote, I had the most crazy experience through this sort of this unbelievable course of events. I got Dr. Sarno's work and then I found your work. And then I realized your profile picture on Instagram was taken at my coffee shop because it just so happens that the picture that I put up there, it was taken at this coffee shop. And he said, and I'm the general manager there. And I go, God damn, it's that kid.
Wow.
So I wrote him back and I went in this morning and I gave him a copy of my book and we sat down and talked for a half hour. He's already bought my course and he's on his way and his problem is back pain. And here we are sitting and talking about your back pain and like you're totally better. And I know he's going to end up listening and like just shout out to all of you guys out there that are just waking up and figuring this out and doing the work because it is everything. And so Jacqueline, as we kind of round this out, tell me about your work now. Are you somebody that is taking patients virtually? Is this something that you're offering or not quite yet? Like, tell me about how people might be helped.
Yeah, so I am fully, doing virtual work. I am licensed in California. So I'm a licensed psychotherapist in California in private practice. And I also do mind body wellness coaching where it's specifically targeted for TMS work. So I do have some room to take on some patients and it's just transformative. I mean, this work it's transformative in the sense that I know the pain. I think what is something you said? Like the pain is just the beginning.
The pain is the biggest, littlest part. It gets us through the door, but then your whole life becomes available to you.
I mean, and that's what's happened for me. And that's what I want people to know from my story and from any story that you listen to is that it's so incredible. Like, I'm sure you've heard, I never thought that I would ever, ever say, I'm thankful for the pain, yada, yada, yada. I was like, yeah. Okay, people, whatever. But I am a new person in how I operate in my life, how I am as a mother, my patience for just myself and just how I go about everything. I'm just a different person now. And it really has opened me up in ways that I really didn't know existed because I was on autopilot for so long, just trying to be good, 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 keep going, keep going, keep going. And, I realized, oh my gosh, that this is what I needed, is just taking care of me for the first time in my life. And if that meant that it was my back stuff that got me here, and when I say take care of me, I mean give myself permission to do what I want in my life and to just say yes to the things I want to say yes to and say no to the things that don't work for me and just creating much healthier boundaries in my life.
Well, that is just amazing. And I second that emotion on every level because my whole life is created as a result of waking up to this work when I was, in my mid-20s and then waking more deeply up to it in my early 30s when I had the real, the second acute pain incident and ended up, seeing Dr. Sarno and then, all of that led to me speaking on the alumni panel and working with him and opening my private practice and getting him referring into my practice and all the things that happened to me all happen because of the pain. And then I look at my parenting, and I have these three teenagers and you are correct. Little kids, little problems, big kids, big problems. I hate to say it because how old are your kids?
My son is 7 and my daughter will be 4 in December.
Okay.
I know.
And you know what? I don't mean to sound negative. I mean, it's just, I like love my kids too much, which is like whatever is wrong with me. I care too much.
No, I get
I'm
it.
Always working on it. It sucks. And so I feel like such pain when they suffer. But I will say with these three teenagers who are all going through all their teenagery shit, I am able to sit with them through their grief. I am able, even though it's uncomfortable and even though my anxiety might be through the roof, I am able to calmly and patiently allow them to have their experience of being alive. And A, that's making them into like the most kick-ass humans. Like I am so, so impressed by them and proud to know them. But B, selfishly, they love me. They live for me. I have to peel them off of me. I don't have teenagers who go into their rooms and close the door. I have teenagers where at 10 o'clock at night, I'm like, you guys, I'm seriously so tired. I'm really loving this conversation, but you have to go away. And that is a gift because I did this work. This, like, it's yes, pain, of course, pain. Pain is the entryway that invites us to the precipice of the truths that have been awaiting our acknowledgement. And when we feel them and live them and experience them and inhabit them, then we become empowered to be these people in the world. And it just gets me so excited because when I look at the problems of the world, okay, and I could probably name 10 right off the top of my head right now, they all need people. They need people that are awake and aware and patient and willing. They require people who are comfortable with grief and suffering because many of the problems of the world accompany a lot of human grief and suffering. And we're all out there, and so many of us out there that would be making these huge differences are laid up with pain or crippled by anxiety. And here we are with like such a great solution. So it makes me feel excited.
Yes. I mean, and I so agree and so get everything that you are saying because I'm just a different kind of mom. It's just kind of, there's just like a more of an ease. It's not this level of intensity that things have to be a certain way, or if they are upset about something that, oh my gosh, what's wrong? Or how can I make it better? Or how can I fix it? That it's okay. Like there's just an ease where I'm able to just be more present. And this desire to fix is just, it's dissipated for me.
Totally. It's acceptance. Yeah. Acceptance and surrender and just being present with what is, and it's everything. And well, Jacqueline, thank you so much for coming on the pod. Is there any like final thing you want to say? How can people find you if they do want to try to hook up with you as a therapist or a coach?
They can find me on my website, which is JacquelineNatesMFT.com. So that's JacquelineE, N as in Nancy, ATESMFT.com.
Awesome. All right, guys, I know that people are constantly hitting me up for where to find a good, skilled and trained TMS therapist. You have one right here. So definitely look her up. And Jacqueline, such a pleasure to talk to you today.
Such a pleasure. And if there's one last thing I could say.
Please.
One last thing is I found when I really started to sink into this work, I was so excited and I wanted to scream it from the rooftops and share it with any person that was close to me. Was like, oh my gosh, they have tension headaches. Oh my gosh, they have migraines. They have IBS. They have all the things, right? Oh my gosh, like, oh, do you know about this work? Do you know about this work? And I would just get, and I am so passionate about this work, but I found over time in my, you know, my, it was like my impulse to want to like tell everyone that, like you say, true readiness is everything.
Yes.
And that in this work, and especially in this TMS camp, we have such a desire to want to take care of others, which is wonderful, but to a fault at times, right? Just take care of you. Just know that if you have found this work and that it is making sense and you are allowing it to sink in for you, just focus on yourself. And if people are curious, they're curious, and that they can take it upon themselves to research and to want to do the work, but don't make it your mission to want to, you know, fix everyone or to want everyone to understand this work. Because I find that I get into like my own internal conflict with that. And I've just sort of like just eased up on, you know what, like, I'm taking care of me. And if they want to do this work, they can do this work. And if they're curious, I'll just say that, you know, yeah, it was this mind body work. And if they want to know more, they'll get to know more, but just focus on you.
100%. And I think that that's really great because another typical TMS trait is that when we get a little fatigued on focusing on ourselves, it feels like we're doing the good work to start focusing on other people, you know, super codependent and whatever, because we're all just like that. And great advice, because it can feel like a rejection when you try to get excited about it and someone's like, oh, that's, you know, that doesn't work for me, or that's stupid, or that's, you know, woo-woo, or whatever people might say. So just, you know, keep your eyes on your own paper, because the more focused you are just in terms of being present with yourself, the more relief you're going to get.
Spot on. There you go.
There you go. Mic drop. Oh, all right. So
thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad. Thank you for being persistent, because I know that, you know, I'm such a busy girl, and I'm so just thrilled that we got to finally talk.
I am too. And thank you for everything that you've done. And, you know, my life has been, you know, transformed in this work, and, you know, it's just been a blessing. So thank you for having me on too.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, guys, everyone out there, I hope you got a lot from this conversation. If you need more support, certainly contact Jacqueline, because she's the bomb, and she's been there and she's walked the path. And there's nothing like being with someone that's walked the path. I can certainly say that myself. And for you guys out there, if you're enjoying the podcast, if you could go over to iTunes and rate and review it, it really, really helps the podcast become visible to more people, which is happening all the time. We are rounding out 2 million downloads, should be there by the next few weeks. So that's very exciting. And until next time, this has been The Cure for Chronic Pain with me, Nicole Sachs. I will see you then. Bye-bye.